Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Corey Erdman alongside Morgan Campbell making our television debut officially, so we'll ring the bell for that.
Now, we've been extra loud for the TV.
Extra loud.
Yes.
Now, portions of this show have been on television in the past,
yes,
but this is the first week that in full you are seeing us on television, if indeed that is the medium that you're watching us on. You can also listen to us on iTunes, at the iTunes Store in podcast format, and of course,
on
Podomatic as well, anywhere where you can find podcasts.
Yes.
And on YouTube
on
as
YouTube.
Well. But now that we're on the silver screen, so to speak, we're on television. Let's get to the televised boxing from last weekend. We had two cards on Showtime and on HBO, just like the old days.
Exactly.
And just like the old days, the ratings were split basically 50-50. I mean, HBO got about, they peaked at about 820,000, I want to say 850,000.
Right.
Showtime somewhere in the 600,000 range. We'll start on Showtime because I think there's a little more to discuss there.
Yes.
Although there's plenty to discuss about the Matisse-Postol fight as well. I was relieved to see that although Adrian Broner decided that he was a new man,
yes,
leading up to this fight, that he was very much the same guy. I enjoy watching Adrian Broner. I love his antics. And so when I saw him come out with Migos,
yes,
and dancing with the chains, and when I saw him not change his style whatsoever in stopping Habib Alakverdiev, by the way.
Yes.
We had it right the first time last week.
Pronunciation.
When I saw all of that, it made me very happy that Adrian Broner is still Adrian Broner.
Yes, arrogant Adrian Broner. Every time an arrogant athlete comes along, whether it's Adrian Broner or like Yasiel Puig in baseball, people complain, especially crusty sports writers, and gripe that this guy needs to have more respect. He needs to be less arrogant. He needs to, one, be humble. And it's even better if he is humbled, if someone or something or the game does it to him. And what happens is when arrogant Adrian Broner, when Yasiel Puig stops being arrogant and starts being humble, they also become very boring. And then you get just what you asked for. And then they say, well, we're the great personalities in boxing. Well, every time one comes along, you guys sit there and complain.
You want to pacify him.
Right.
Yeah.
And try to get him to be like everyone else. You know, until he, yeah, his personality just becomes so neutral and so vanilla that he's not interesting anymore. So I, yes, was glad to see, because humble Adrian Broner is, arrogant Adrian Broner is insufferable, but humble Adrian Broner is insufferable and boring.
Correct.
So I'd rather be insufferable and fun and see insufferable and fun, like the Bruce Jenner joke that he made at the
horrifying
end of the fight.
Yeah.
That was the longest setup
for a botched joke,
for the lamest joke that he didn't deliver smoothly,
and a joke that should never be made
ever. But except he's Adrian Broner, and if he was in a sport that more people cared about, he'd have been in big trouble.
He'd be fine. Yeah.
He was in a sport that had a league.
Even Jim Gray, by the way, and Jim Gray sometimes, when Jim Gray gets offended, he just takes the mic away,
yes,
and throws right back to Mauro Ranallo. This didn't faze Jim Gray whatsoever.
Well,
he saw nothing wrong with
Jim
this joke.
Gray,
he chuckled along and just let him continue.
He was complicit in it. This,
yes.
This was no different from Jim Gray at this point. And it's funny about Jim Gray because he got such adulation and admiration and support from journalists when he took that hard line on questioning Pete Rose. Hey, Pete Rose, did you gamble on baseball? But recently, he's just become, you know, a mean Gene Okerlund. He
yes.
is completely complicit. And if you're in Toronto, and if you follow me on Twitter, and you know, I like Barry Davis from Sportsnet, I hate Munenori Kawasaki and what he's become in this shtick where Barry goes and interviews him, and the butt of every joke is that Munenori Kawasaki doesn't speak English very well. Ha 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 ha. Funny. They're not interviews, they're setups, and Barry sets up the joke, and then the punchline delivered by Kawasaki is that Kawasaki's English isn't strong. Ha 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 ha. But Jim Gray at this point is no different. This was not too far removed from Barry Davis and Kawasaki.
You know, but at least the Adrian Broner shtick, outside of that, outside of when it's offensive,
yes,
it's still entertaining.
Yes.
And you know, to your point about people trying to tear Broner down and trying to muzzle him, so to speak, they seem to decide that because he's arrogant, that's the reason why he's failing in some way. And they make that decision about a lot of athletes.
Yes.
And you know, there are a lot of boxers out there who spend their money on ridiculous things, who go out to the club, who behave in the way that Broner yes. portrays himself and is very open about his lifestyle. A lot of people live that way. A lot of athletes live that way. That has nothing to do with the actual problems that Adrian Broner has inside the ring. The fact that Adrian Broner goes to the club on Saturday night doesn't make him throw 35 punches around right. as a junior welterweight.
Right.
I know you want to make that. Well, you want to make that connection by saying, well, because he's in the club, he's not training hard enough, so he's not in good enough shape, he's not focused, and so he doesn't throw enough punches. But we're tying a lot of things together that yes. don't necessarily connect.
And you don't know what he's doing when he's not in the club.
Of course.
And as we discussed last week, so much of what has made Adrian Broner marketable is the fact that he puts himself out there and he markets himself on social media. And I hate to break this to you guys, a lot of what you see on Instagram and even on Twitter and Facebook isn't a true reflection of how all your Instagram feed lives their lives. I'm sorry to break that to you guys. Sometimes your friends pose the shots of the perfect cup of coffee.
Yep.
Sometimes that happens.
With the heart.
Yes.
There's one in Morgan's cup right now, in fact. There it is. Yeah.
Exactly. So when Adrian Broner, you know, Instagrams himself out at the club doing whatever, that might be what he's doing for 20 minutes out of his life. That doesn't mean he's not in the gym the rest of the time. And it doesn't mean that that's what he's doing every single night of his life.
Well, and that's the thing, because, you know, Floyd, when he was still an active fighter,
yes.
portrays the very same lifestyle.
Exactly.
But because, because he never loses, and B, because there's always a produced reality show surrounding
yes.
him, we know him to be one of the hardest working athletes in the world. But Broner could work equally as hard. We've never really had that kind of access into Broner's camp outside of what he produces by himself for about
right.
billions. We don't really know.
And again, so much of this is based on, you know, what our ideas of a boxer are and what the ideas of what a boxer should be doing are. So we think of fighters as living this Spartan existence, and we think that anything that goes against the idea that fighters live a Spartan existence necessarily takes away from what they can do in the ring and necessarily takes away from their ability to prepare themselves to fight, even though there's really no evidence that that's what happens. Again, Manny Pacquiao, jet sets.
Sure.
Karaoke's.
Yeah.
Sings in concerts.
Yeah.
Doesn't stop him from preparing for fights. Right.
Has concerts planned directly after the fight.
Right.
You know.
So
how's he supposed to train when he's getting a set list ready for tonight?
Right. So, and there is also a lot of, an inability for a lot of fans and journalists to distinguish between correlation and causation. Adrian Broner is arrogant. Adrian Broner loses every now and then. Adrian Broner must lose every now and then because he's arrogant, even though there's plenty of humble, hardworking fighters who also lose. Sometimes you just lose.
Right.
This just happens.
Right.
It has nothing to do with your level of humility.
Well, that's a decent segue into one of the craziest boxing articles that I've read in a very long time.
You know what just happened?
What?
Just this very moment, Cam F. Awesome followed me on Twitter.
Oh, perfect. Cam F. Awesome.
I mean, right now.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
We need to get Cam F. Awesome on this
yes,
program, by the way. He's the wonderful guy.
Yes.
Go ahead. But one of the craziest boxing articles that I've read in a very long time. And, we've talked about Thomas Hauser on this broadcast before. But in general, I don't want to, you know, people are out there working hard and they're learning their craft and whatnot. So I don't want this necessarily to be a forum for blasting other
right.
people who cover the sport of boxing. But Conor Rubush's article on Bad Left Hook,
yes.
Which was titled About Bullshit, pertaining to Adrian Broner.
Yes.
Is one of the worst and most tone-deaf articles about the sport of boxing that I've read in quite some time.
Yes.
Basically.
Agreed on all counts.
And without summarizing the entire thing, effectively, to summarize a portion of it.
Yes.
Conor decides that because, in his world, racism doesn't exist anymore, that Adrian Broner and other slick black defensive fighters don't need to fight in the manner that their forefathers, such as Charlie Burley and Holman Williams and the fighters of the Black Murderers Row, they don't need to fight like them anymore. So, you know, in post-racial America,
right.
in Conor's world, you better knuckle up and stand and trade, boy. That's basically yes. my takeaway from that portion of the article. And there are a lot of crazy things.
Racism is over, so the defensive-minded fighter is obsolete.
Yes.
Is what is one of the points Connor, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Roybush is making, which is sort of like saying to, you know, and often you'll hear me make this analogy between pitchers, baseball pitchers and boxers, because both of these groups, you know, there's different ways to get the job done. You can be a power pitcher, you can be a finesse pitcher. But this is like saying to pitchers, well, because we're in the age of, you know, the 6 and 7 man bullpen, you have relief pitchers. So there's absolutely no reason for you to pitch to contact anymore. Pitching
That's right.
to contact is for back in the old days where you had to pitch 9 innings of every game. But now that you've got a bullpen, it's your responsibility to try to strike everyone out. And if you run up 125 pitches by the fifth inning, well, who cares? Because you have a bullpen. And so it's never incumbent upon you, even if it's in your own self-interest in extending your career, to learn how to pitch to contact. Nope. Strike everyone out. So this is what he's saying. One of many things he's
yes.
saying.
Yes. And the implication that these skilled fighters are just getting away with winning these fights,
well,
and
yeah,
are fooling
that,
people
well,
in some way.
That's the other point, right? Because there's this conceit that runs through the story, and the conceit is that these fighters bullshit. And then like a good defensive fighter is actually bullshitting people into thinking that he's winning a fight that he's not necessarily winning.
Everyone involved.
And he's just so in love with this idea of BS that it kind of, one, it sidetracks him from realizing that he can get rid of the whole BS conceit and just say deception, because that's what we're talking
right.
about. That's what we're talking about, is that guys like Mayweather, or to a lesser extent Broner, but Broner's very different, we can talk about that, aren't always winning fights as much as they're tricking you into thinking they're winning fights by fighting so well defensively, and that the only criterion is clean, effective punching. But if you're a good defensive fighter, your opponent's not going to land as many punches cleanly and effectively. And there are any number of ways to create a deficit between the clean punches you land and the clean punches you receive. You can just throw more punches, or you can say to yourself, oh, hey, wait a minute, why don't I stop him from landing so many punches, and then I'll land more.
And that's also deficit. Implying that these great defensive fighters are only playing defense and
yes.
aren't sharp, accurate punchers on their own.
Yes.
We're getting the rap signal right here on this segment, but I do want to talk about this on the other side of the break. I think there's
going.
A whole lot more to get into, and
yes.
then we'll also talk about Matisse Postel. We will talk about Roy Jones and Max Kellerman's pound-for-pound list, which also came out of that broadcast.
Yes.
And we love reviewing boxing reality television, so we have to talk about the road to Golovkin-Lemieux.
Exactly.
Plenty more coming up here on Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Welcome back to Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Corey Erdman and Morgan Campbell here with you as we continue to look back at Adrian Broner and Khabib Alakverdiev from this past weekend. Adrian Broner getting the stoppage victory in the final round. And we're talking about the fallout and the coverage of it
yes.
since then. In particular, one article written by Conor Roybush over at A Bad Left Hook. Again, full disclosure, the editor, so to speak, of that website, Scott Crist, is a friend of mine. I think he is an intelligent boxing mind, but he had nothing to do with this article. So if Scott is watching this, I want him
yeah,
to
I
know. I got nothing
know,
against
I don't
you.
Know Scott. I just know him via Twitter.
Yes.
You know, we tweet sometimes. And again, yeah, he seems very sensible. And we don't have to agree on everything.
No.
But even the stuff we disagree on, it's
like, okay, you thought that out.
It's
yeah.
well thought out.
Yeah.
Whereas, and this is the point, is that this is overthought. I remember, you know, I used to cover soccer. In the first year, probably 8 years ago, Toronto FC was in town. It was their first season, and there was the Under-20 World Cup was also here in Canada. It's 2007. And what happened is you had a lot of mainstream media, people like me, who hadn't covered soccer before. We weren't coming from a soccer background. Then you had like the soccer specialist media. And I remember this one game in Edmonton. Team Canada had lost, I think, to Austria. You know, and there's this guy that runs maybe a soccer newsletter or website. English accent, blonde hair, ponytail, and people are asking, you know, the coach questions in the post-game news conference, and he comes with his English accent, and he says, well, it's obvious to anyone who knows soccer that Canada were by far the superior side. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, wait a minute, Canada's lost 3-0. How are they the superior side? But we didn't know anything about soccer. He knew everything about soccer, so he was going to tell us and explain to us how the team that lost 3-0 was in fact the superior side. And
yes,
this is what this article is. He, Conor Rubis, God bless him, he loves boxing. But to the extent that he thinks himself into seeing things that aren't happening,
such as Habib winning this fight at the time of the stoppage.
Yes.
More on that in a second. But just other past scorecards he turned in, like Pacquiao beating Mayweather 115-113,
yes,
the first time he scored it. Canelo Mayweather being a draw. Glasgow Cunningham being 117-111.
Canelo Mayweather a draw. There's a point where he's explaining his scoring of the Pacquiao Mayweather fight where he says he didn't see the whole fight because his stream dropped or something like that. So then why are you scoring rounds you didn't see or presenting a whole fight scorecard based on not all the rounds?
Yeah.
You know, and he takes pride in the fact that his scorecards look different from other people's scorecards.
That's not always good.
No, and this is not to say that you should just be, you know, a lemming and follow the crowd. But in something like this, and I understand what he thinks he's doing. I see more than the rest of you. I'm more perceptive.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point where you cross over from being more perceptive to just being a contrarian. And because you think you know more about boxing, you're just going to pick against what everyone else picks because that's your best way of showing that you know more about boxing. And it's you can know a lot about boxing and express it without being a condescending contrarian jerk about it.
Like, yes,
I don't know Conor Rubish. I would love to watch the fights with Scott Crisp. I don't know. I can tell you for sure I wouldn't want to watch the fights.
No, I don't think we want to hang out. And let me be clear, because
now you guys can come to our fight parties. We
are
the best
fine.
People to watch fights
yeah,
with.
Yeah, we have a great
absolute
time.
Absolute best.
I know better than anyone that sometimes you can turn in a scorecard that people disagree with. I know that. So
because you're on the take.
Because I'm on the take. Right. But, you know, these are scorecards that he's turning in that are in direct contrast to what everybody else
yes.
is saying. Not a fight that is divisive, you know, amongst the audience in any way.
No.
But scorecards that are flatly against what is actually happening. In particular,
yes.
Broner Habib, where for 5 rounds, and again, he was watching this fight live. He was in Cincinnati. He says about 50 feet away from the ring.
Okay.
So John David Jackson, as we know from watching on television,
yes.
was thinking about stopping this fight for 5 rounds previous to the stoppage.
Yes.
So are you telling me that you knew more than the corner who is in charge of taking care of the
That's
fighter?
That's exactly what he's
And more
me.
Than the fighter who himself got stopped.
Listen.
And not only, we're not just coming to that conclusion that that's what he's saying. That's actually what he's saying.
Yes.
Because if you scroll down into the comments, someone asked him, and one of his colleagues, Will Esko, asked him, do you think AB's bullshitting can also influence the opposing corner and the referee?
And that's such a facetious question.
Yes.
The answer to that question should be no.
Yeah, it should be no.
Yes.
But yes, I absolutely do.
Of course.
Was the answer. How can they be fooled?
Because, again, this is the person that he's... I get the impression from reading what he writes that he's used to being the smartest boxing guy in the room.
Yes.
And the way to express this, again, is just to disagree with everyone and say, oh, you don't see it because you can't see everything I can see because I'm smarter and more perceptive. To the point where he's going to watch a fight and then overrule the guys that are, one, in the ring, two, taking the punches. Yeah, I know you're ready to quit this fight. I know you're bleeding. But you're not really bleeding. You're not really hurt. It's just that you've been BS'd by Adrian Broner.
Right.
Well, no, maybe it wasn't the BS. It was the punches.
Yeah.
Adrian Broner, when he's imitating Floyd Mayweather, is a painfully boring fighter to watch. And he's not very effective because Floyd Mayweather can defend very well, but he's also a counterpuncher. Whereas Adrian Broner is either getting out of the way of your punches, getting hit by your punches, or punching you. But when Adrian Broner fights offensively, he's smart, he's creative, he's
yes.
compelling. And this is what you saw in the second half of that fight. And so go ask Alec Verdiev if he was being tricked or if he was getting punched in the face.
Right.
He's getting punched in the face or getting tricked into getting punched in the face.
Well, and listen, Paulie Malignaggi told me, and we should have had the clip right, but Paulie told me on Friday that Adrian Broner is the best defensive fighter that he ever faced. And, you know, you would think, hey, that's weird because Paulie seemed to get off a lot in that
yeah.
fight. But he said, no, it was really hard to hit this guy clean. Are you telling me that Paulie is lying? Like the guy that was there feeling his fists in the body of Adrian Broner was deceived in
he
some way, and that you know better.
Yes, he just doesn't. If Paulie Malignaggi was more perceptive, and more dedicated to the craft of boxing, he would understand.
And listen, we're going to hit the break in about a minute here, but, you know, he might be the smartest boxing fan in whatever room he's hanging out with. When you enter this room or boxing Twitter or whatnot, that is not what you are. And the other thing, like, I can tell that he just started watching the sport about like 2 years ago or something.
Right.
Just based on what I've seen on social media. Remember when he compared Monty Mezaclay to Aaron Pryor? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Do you remember when he said that Manny Pacquiao's defense was derivative of Marlon Starling's? Do you remember that one? How about when he compared Rancis Bartholomew to Salvador Sanchez? These are all guys that fighters that he discovered over the last year. How about
when he said... They both speak Spanish.
Yes.
Yeah.
How about when he said that Luis Rosa was using the Ketchel shift? New York club fighter Luis Rosa was using that something from Stanley Ketchel.
It could happen. There are all kinds of journeyman baseball players that, you know, borrowed a batting stance from George Brett.
Of course.
You
know? Oh, yeah. Well, not just George Brett. If we're talking Stanley Ketchel, they were borrowing it from, like, Turkey Stearns.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't think any of this
Greenberg.
Happened.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know. This is the last I'm ever going to talk about this article. Go read it if you want to laugh, or don't ever read it. You'll probably be
don't
smarter.
Don't ever read it. Because Corey just bugged me. He's like, we got to talk about this on the show, and it's only because I did it for the show. I did it for you guys. I read it so you won't have to.
We'll switch gears. We'll talk about the HBO telecast when we come back after the break. Matisse and Postel, and apparently we have a new star. Star is born, so to speak, in the 140-pound weight class. We'll be right back on Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Welcome back to Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Corey Erdman and Morgan Campbell here with you. We've broken down the Showtime card. Let's move over to HBO from this past weekend. Victor Postel scoring what some would consider to be a shocking win, or at least a shocking result, in defeating Lucas Matisse, stopping him in the 10th round. Now, we'll get into the idea of quitting and Lucas Matisse in just a second, but the very first thing that I noticed in this fight, Victor Postel comes through the curtain, and what's playing? Simply the Best by Tina Turner. And this is just another example of Eastern Europe's fascination with this song and with Tina Turner. When I was calling the World Combat Games in St. Petersburg, Russia,
I had no clue. Tell me.
Every single time someone received a medal.
Yep.
Gold, silver, and bronze. So three times for every weight class, yep, for every single event, in every single sport, they played Simply the Best. And Victor Postel comes out to Simply the Best. I guarantee you, every single Eastern European fighter either comes out to the Rocky theme,
yep,
comes out to Simply the Best, or We Will Rock You, or Roy Jones. Can't be touched. There's only four songs that they ever use.
Well, as you know, he does shows in Russia.
Yes.
Remember he beat the guy that looked like Bubbles from The Wire?
He is a Russian citizen, which you really notice on these broadcasts, by the way. And
remember he beat the guy that looked like Bubbles from The Wire?
Yes.
And then afterward, he said, hey, give me the mic.
Right.
And started rapping.
Started rapping.
Yeah, can't be touched.
It became a number one hit. Roy Jones loves any fighter from Russia, from Ukraine.
Yes.
Ever since he became Russian or was en route to becoming Russian, he is 100% in favor of these guys. He loved Victor Postel throughout this show.
And it's I like Victor Postel. Now, he made me look like a fool, because I thought, you know, as we were saying last week, because I don't know that he had the power to hurt Matisse.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm wrong.
Yes.
You know, and he is a much more assertive puncher now than he was a year ago. Now, whether or not, because the first thing they set up, you know, on that broadcast is, hey, we have another star, Bud Crawford, how would you like to see these two together? Postel looked great against Matisse, but fighting Matisse doesn't tell you a lot about how you're going to do against Bud Crawford, who's a much better boxer and much more versatile.
Tells you almost nothing.
Tells you zero.
Yeah.
Tells you not a thing.
But it does tell you that he can punch hard enough to get Lucas Matisse out there and make him quit, Morgan.
Well,
because apparently now Lucas Matisse is a quitter, because if you have an eye injury, lots of people.
Who said that?
You go through boxing Twitter right now, you will find many people saying that Lucas Matisse quit. And I guess they also think, I'm trying to think of an example, John Mugabe, when he fought Dwayne Thomas.
Yes.
Broken orbital bone. John Mugabe, the beast, one of the most ferocious fighters ever.
He quit.
Quitter.
Quitter. Well, we always
quitter.
Have this
what a horrible quitter.
Alexis Arguello in the second fight with
quitter.
Aaron Pryor. Quitter.
Yep. Israel Vasquez. Quitter.
Muhammad
Eric
Ali.
Eric Morales.
Muhammad Ali
quitter.
On the stool against
yep.
Larry. Is there a Larry Holmes t-shirt around here?
No. Not right now. But
right. Quitter. Here's the thing. When you watch that, watch the replay. Watch the slow motion replay of that punch. You're not gonna see a guy land a more perfect punch. That was the punch that Adrian Broner was working on in practice. You know, the step back, the draw.
Yep. Yep.
Straight right hand. Which always works beautifully against a guy holding pads, but like in the real world against a professional, very rarely does it present itself to you that cleanly. And he was able to step back and put all the weight on his back foot and put all the weight on his front foot
right.
And put his whole, it wasn't an arm punch, it was his whole body. And then Matisse moving forward to meet it just increases the impact. So it's not like, you know, he went down from a jab or a left hook to the body or anything like that. Left hooks to the body hurt. They hurt, guys. I don't know what business you think these people are in. Again, when we talked about Mayweather versus Berto, and Berto only landed 83 punches, we thought, man, what a horrible night for Berto.
Yeah.
Think about this, people. When you're a professional boxer, and there's a day in your life that you only get punched 83 times, that's a great day. I only got hit 83 times today. That's a great day. So where do you get off telling people they quit? If he was a quitter, he would have quit a long time ago. He would have quit like most people.
Never stepped in the ring.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was obvious, too, that when Matisse was on his knee, he wasn't just, like, dazed. Like, he was in some physical discomfort. There was an injury there. So why get up?
Exactly.
Why get up and keep fighting? Like,
in a fight, you're losing, too.
I don't know what you people want from a boxer except that someone dies in the ring or is blinded. And not blinded over the long term. Like, right in front of
instantly
you.
Instantly blinded, yeah.
Yes. Oh, perfect. He'll never see again out of that eye. Now I'm satisfied. At this fight that I didn't even pay for.
Because they declare him a quitter, until further proof. Until proven wrong. Until he says, I have a broken orbital bone.
Until proof of what?
Exactly. I don't understand.
He got hit with the perfect punch.
Yeah.
He quit too.
I will say, if we are, and we're getting the rap signal on this segment, if we are going to make light of this in any way, I wonder if those NWA Not With Al t-shirts that included Lucas Matisse, are those on for like 75% off right now?
They're gonna
just put Victor Postal in there.
Yeah,
instead.
It's going to be like those championship t-shirts from the team that loses.
Yes.
The Seattle Seahawks 2015 Super Bowl champion
right.
t-shirts. They're off going to an orphanage somewhere.
Even though, might I add, two of the fighters that were on the original t-shirt, they've lost to Heyman fighters.
They lost to Heyman.
That's
fighter.
All right.
They're
so,
making up a new batch with Postal.
Right.
There.
So on top of it being inaccurate and appropriating and racist, you know, whatever. All right. We'll be back with more after the break here on Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Welcome back to Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Corey Erdman and Morgan Campbell here with you. We just talked about Victor Postol and Lucas Matisse. One thing I wanted to touch on, which we sort of alluded to in the broadcast, which to me might be the best talking point from that broadcast entirely,
yes.
is the pound-for-pound list
yep.
that was revealed from Roy Jones, or at least the number one on their pound-for-pound list,
yes.
for Roy Jones and for Max Kellerman. Now, Max sort of hedged his bet later on by saying he thinks that Andre Ward is number one.
Yes.
But when Roy Jones came out and said Vasily Lomachenko is the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, Max Kellerman's immediate response was, I agree.
Why?
And then for a second sort of had to backtrack a little bit, but you could tell that he sort of thinks that, or can at least make that argument. You can't make that argument.
No.
In order to make that argument, you need to forget that he lost to Orlando Salido.
That's not
to discredit Lomachenko and how great he is and whatnot, but we clearly want him to be a whole lot better right now, right out of the gate, than he actually is.
So, yeah, that would make... So if Lomachenko is number one pound for pound, then wouldn't that make Orlando Salido 1A?
Or Roman Martinez.
Right.
Would be number one
right.
super champion.
And I understand, to your point, HBO's desire, you know, on the other side, Showtime's desire to anoint a new top pound for pound, a new top pound for pound, drop everything and see this guy attraction right now, because there's a void at the top of Buck. In the same way that like all these heavyweights are waiting for Klitschko to retire, because there's a void. And what happens when this void is created is that all these guys who normally wouldn't get a sniff of the title now have a chance to be the champion. So now all these guys who are good fighters, really good fighters, but not the star, we're throwing these names out here hoping one of them sticks. And Lomachenko, it's a more than a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, well, I mean, the consensus, I think, or the name that is most commonly pinned at the top of that list right now is Chocolatito.
Yes.
Is Roman Gonzalez, which I think is the fairest argument to make out there based on how active he's been recently. I think you can say Andre Ward can be number one, but given that we've only seen him, you know, against Paul Smith recently.
Or even Rigondia, who always gets ignored in these discussions and erased from these discussions, hasn't lost. Hits the canvas every now and then, but hasn't lost. And again, for Rigondia, when he beat Donaire, that put him number three pound for pound
instantly.
Yes, it was Mayweather, Ward, Rigo.
Yep,
Mayweather's gone. Ward, Rigo still hasn't lost,
but he's now plummeting slowly in his rankings, and
not from having lost,
right?
But just from having been inactive because his promoter didn't want to promote.
Right, and the same arguments that you would make about Lomachenko are very much there with Rigo.
Yes.
You know, if you were to say that Lomachenko is anywhere in that top 10, you do so based on his amateur pedigree.
Yes.
Perceived level of skill.
Perceived
advantages against other guys in and around his weight class, or mythical matchups if they were all the same. Because Rigo has the same things.
Yes.
Except he's proven them.
He's proven them, and he hasn't lost. And you know, and the argument they always make is that, well, this guy, who has he beaten in his prime? Well, what elite fighters has Lomachenko beaten in his prime? And this is not the same thing against Lomachenko. This is just to say that to anoint him the pound for pound king is premature,
sure,
because he still has people he needs to beat.
We've touched on this on Twitter in the past, but it is an interesting time in boxing because we've said this, but this is the first time since pound for pound became a thing.
Yes.
Really, when the question of who the best fighter in the world is, the answer isn't very obvious.
No, it's wide open.
Because the lineage has basically gone from, Julio Cesar Chavez, Mike Tyson, Pernell Whitaker, Roy Jones Jr., and then basically, you know, there was like an Oscar De La Hoya period, maybe to Shane Mosley, where it was sort of up in the air a little bit, and then straight to Manny and Floyd.
Yes,
and that's it. There's never been a question like this. Now you can make, I don't think you can make the argument for Lomachenko.
No, not
yet. Can make the argument for Chocolatito, for Andre Ward, for other guys. I've seen people make it even for Vladimir Klitschko. These are all arguments that you can make, but we really haven't seen this time period since this list became a thing that we talked about.
No, and you know, the next person people are going to start agitating for is your man, Gennady Golovkin.
Yes.
And I think he deserves a higher place on that list than Vasily Lomachenko. And as you mentioned last week, there is this kind of tendency to speak of when all people from the former Soviet Republic, from all people from former Soviet republics as Russian.
Yes.
And then to speak of them as all one person as if they're not distinct individuals.
Right.
So we can just talk about Lomachenko, Postel,
Alexander Usyk, whoever you want to throw out there,
as interchangeable, and they're not. But Golovkin actually does probably have a more legitimate claim for a spot at the top or near the top of pound for pound than Lomachenko does. No disrespect to Lomachenko, but this is professional boxing. There's just more. There are more people he has to beat before we can say this is the absolute best professional boxer in the world.
Speaking of Golovkin, he finally got the boxing reality show treatment, although only in a 15-minute format, as HBO presented The Road to Golovkin Lemieux.
Yes.
My takeaway. And it wasn't really a takeaway for me because as people who have been in the Canadian boxing scene, I've gotten to know David Lemieux over the years. I sort of know what he's all about. David Lemieux is infinitely more interesting to me than Gennady Golovkin. David Lemieux is a guy who knows seven languages, seems to be a wonderful chef.
Yes.
And is a pretty thoughtful speaker when you clip the microphone onto him.
Yes.
That's way more interesting to me than the tired Golovkin stuff. Like, you brought up Munenori Kawasaki, by the way, and that tired joke, that is the same same thing as people setting up Triple G to say he's a good boy.
Yes, and
I'm so tired of that, man.
And here and now here, we started the show with people taking arrogant Adrian Broner and trying to make him boring because they think boring is better for some reason. Now you have Gennady Golovkin, who's an exciting fighter, but by all indications, a painfully boring human being. And they're trying anything to make this guy seem interesting. They took the, if you watch the episode, you know, they take the tram to the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And they say, look at this. Isn't he fascinating? He likes scenic views. Well, who doesn't like scenic views? That doesn't make him unusual.
There's also just the top of a ski hill. It isn't even like a thrilling place to be or anything like that.
Like, hey guys, let's get on the top of the ski lift. And, okay, we're here now.
All right. Yeah.
Right? And they cut
no
to,
snow.
They cut to Abel Sanchez. Yeah, he really, really likes the serenity.
Yeah.
The other thing about, they're trying hard to promote the guy. I'll give them that.
Of course.
There's a professional wrestling, there's a Kurt Hennig feel to this. Where
yes.
So you guys that are old enough to remember Mr. Perfect, when he first came to the world, it was the World Wrestling Federation back then. And they cut all these promos, and he would just be playing every sport perfectly because he was Mr. Perfect. So he would throw the football, catch it himself. He ran the table in pool.
He played against Mike Modano in hockey. Yes. He was a gnat. Just
yes. So here we have Gennady Golovkin and his buddies. For some reason, there's like a driveway basketball hoop, or as Ludacris would call it on Empire, a basketball goal. There's a basketball goal, and they're trying to hit like seated 3-point shots.
Shirtless.
Sitting, yes.
Shirtless.
Fully tresvanted, shirtless, sitting on the ground, trying to 3-point set shot with two hands, seated. And no one can do it except Golovkin, who comes, sits down, seated. Hits the 3-point set yes. shot from his bum. But this is too
by
easy.
The way, there's also the implication in that scene, even with the narrator, I forget the line, but there's the implication that he just sits down and gets it on the first try.
Yes.
Except you can visibly see when the cut happens.
Yes.
Clearly he took more than a few shots.
Listen. If you start implying that these reality TV shows are edited or staged in any way, don't let Dan Rayfield find out, because he will tweet.
I mean,
tweet
furious.
A storm at you.
By the way, what did we tell you two episodes ago on this very show? A boxing reality show can't happen without a backyard barbecue for your
yes.
supporters. There's David Lemieux, grill master.
Yes.
Who seems to be cooking up fairly intricate Lebanese dishes for his
yes.
daughter earlier on. Single dad David Lemieux. And is then also grill master cooking filet mignon and some skewers for some people as well.
Yes.
You have to have that. There needs to be that scene in every single boxing reality TV show.
They lost the coin toss. They're like, hey, listen, when do you got a barbecue, man?
Yes.
Because imagine if Golovkin had lost that coin toss and he had the barbecue.
What would he make?
Right.
What would he make?
Lemieux just happened to be this great chef.
Well, it wouldn't be as good as Ruslan Pervodnikov, who doesn't barbecue anything. Remember, he just eats raw meats, like raw seal.
That's right.
And whatnot. Why don't we get that scene?
Enhanced bioavailability.
That's right, yeah.
The nutrients go straight into your cells when you don't cook it.
Oh, man. All right. On the other side of the break, we're going to touch on Joel Diaz, now training Ruslan Pervodnikov. Speaking of Ruslan,
yes.
we're also going to talk about the KO King of Korea, Randall Bailey, who's on the comeback trail. That and plenty more when we come back on Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Welcome back to Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Corey Erdman and Morgan Campbell here with you. Before we continue with anything else,
yep.
Anyone who's on boxing Twitter right now, Shane Mosley needs your help. Shane Mosley is trying to win his girlfriend back, and he needs everyone's help. And apparently the advice that he's getting right now isn't sufficient, and it's caused Shane now to threaten a Twitter sabbatical, which I can't have.
I am in full support of a Shane Mosley Twitter sabbatical. Someone should have taken Shane Mosley's Twitter from him a long time ago. Shane Mosley tweeted, I hope this thing pulls up. Shane Mosley tweeted at... Oh, you know, he's deleting
the tweets. Oh, he deleted the tweets. Okay. I took screen caps of those.
Shane Mosley got smart.
Yes. So basically, at one point, he tweeted, within the contents of his tweet, put his
yes.
girlfriend in there saying, how do I win at whoever back? She's smart. She's sexy. She's beautiful. She's such a hard worker. How do I get her back? And I'm reading these with Lenny Williams in the background, basically. But now he's just lost it. He's furious. He directly said F you to everybody and has now vanished.
Well,
what did he do?
I don't know, but it's his Twitter feed has gotten increasingly bizarre and sad.
Yes, more and more sad.
And
the saddest one, by the way, before we continue, there was one guy. So yesterday he was giving away signed gloves for charity, right?
Yes.
So one guy apparently paid for one of these charity gloves.
Yes.
And three times he said robbers took the package before it got to his house. So Shane mailed him four gloves. This guy's clearly hoodwinking Shane into sending him four gloves for the price of one.
That is nuts.
And he keeps sending these gloves.
And remember, Shane,
robbers didn't take four gloves.
And Shane had kept tweeting too about his house getting broken into.
Yes.
But this is, and here's the thing about Shane and like feuding with your exes in public, right? Because Shane has used Twitter to lob all kinds of bombs at his ex, at Jen. Talk all kinds of trash about Jen. And then use social media to say, look how happy I am with my new girlfriend. You can't then, because you've made this social media. You've made social media the platform, the arena for this. And you want your ex to pay attention. And now your ex, okay, I'll follow you on Twitter, Shane, and see what's happening. And now she's seeing you beg for some girl that not only that left you, but you screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like she left and you can say, yeah, you know what? Good riddance, because she screwed up. She did me wrong. I screwed up. And now you've already drawn your ex's attention to your plight. And so now there's nowhere to go from there. Like, he is fully in the no shame zone.
And not to mention, like, a day ago, he tweeted, like, pantsless selfies of him laying in bed with her. Clearly, there are other photos, like, on her phone.
Yes.
That if he did screw up in a serious way, are going to make their way to the internet probably in the next 48 hours.
Yes.
And things are going to get a whole lot worse for Shane Mosley.
Yeah, and I don't... And I'm just trying to figure out where it went wrong for him. Because when you think about, you know, what we thought of Shane Mosley 15 years ago, you know, when he beat Oscar De La Hoya, he was Mr. Everything That's Right with boxing.
Yep. His family's around.
He's photogenic.
Yep.
Trained by his dad. And
wears sweaters.
To be nuts.
Yeah, just like an Eddie Golovkin. You put a sweater on a fighter.
Right.
Automatic fan favorite.
And the thing about Shane Mosley, too, is that his reputation survived Balco. Like, here's a guy that was working with Victor Conti. So, yeah, hey, no, sorry, Shane will tell you he didn't say, hey, give me the EPO.
Right.
That Conti's people said, hey, man, take this. It'll be good for you. And it was EPO.
Take this cream.
But, yeah, but his reputation survived that. But he's doing everything he can to make sure that, you know, in 2 years, no one respects him and everyone just kind of pities him.
Speaking of significant others sort of getting involved in things, Joel Diaz,
yes,
makes the somewhat unusual move to now train Ruslan Provodnikov after he has parted ways with Timothy Bradley. Now, Provodnikov, you would think, is Bradley's, what would you say, greatest rival, toughest fight he's ever had in his career. So now Diaz is training him, and in the process of interviewing about why he made this move, he basically said that Bradley, who is managed by his wife, he was not able to communicate with his fighter in the manner that he thought he could, and sort of, you know, quietly lobbed shots at Bradley's wife, and that just... It never, ever ends well.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
It doesn't matter how close you are either.
Exactly.
Right? That's his wife.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That's the person he chose and who chose him. And the thing is, even if Yoel Diaz is right, you still can't do that.
No, you can't.
She could be the worst, either the worst wife or the worst manager,
mm-hmm,
or both. But the fact that she has both those jobs at the same time, and because you can't even preface it with like, hey man, I love your wife as a person, but she's a crappy manager. There's no
right
getting around it. Like, Bradley's going to take it personally, and there's going to be a split.
And it's clear that that was the issue, because the other day on Instagram, Bradley posted like a picture of a Louis Vuitton like chest filled with a fake $15.6 million or whatever, saying, like, look at what my manager has done for me. You know, I love you and whatnot. So clearly this was the issue. Otherwise, he would never come out and say things like this.
$15.6 million?
That is apparently the amount of money that he has made while she has been his manager.
Was it cash?
It was fake cash, yes.
So, like, the thing that Adam Jones should have known existed, that he'd go to the movie prop store.
Correct.
And get all this fake money and say,
you could learn from the Desert Storm Instagram. Yes. We have just a couple of minutes left. We got to hit the break. We'll be right back with more of Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Welcome back to Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Corey Erdman, Morgan Campbell here with you. We have about like a minute 20 left. Yep. But we did want to say welcome back to Randall Bailey, who is now the KO King of Korea, because he is now stationing his career in Korea.
Oh, he's moved there.
He's basically, well, he has like a promoter or a manager of sorts that is now in Korea. He made his debut in Korea, scoring a knockout, of course. And I don't know. He must be paid fantastically well, because if you watch the footage, and it's out there on YouTube, he's scores the knockout, and then clearly they paid for like five members of his squad to be there.
Yes.
So they must be overpaying Randall Bailey to an extraordinary degree, and I say congratulations to you, Randall Bailey.
And that's money that they saved on facility rentals, because the fight appears to be taking place in a high school auditorium. But can we welcome him back? I don't feel like Randall Bailey's ever really left.
No, and I don't think
he's
ever
just
will
kinda
leave.
Gone underground. No, he's never gonna retire. He's 41. Well, just got a knockout.
He can knock out guys in Korea for the rest of his life.
He could. And when he gets to the point where he can't knock out Koreans, he can go to Hungary. And when he can't knock out the Hungarians, he can go to Latvia. He can do this probably until about 51.
I think you and I need to go to Latvia if this ever comes to it.
if I ever need the cash, I know where I'm going for a quick payday.
All right. That about does it for this episode of Fight Network Boxing Weekly. Ring the bell, Morgan. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.
Yes.